Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
Hey, it's Casey with the Iditapod here. Just wanted to give you a quick warning that this bonus interview coming up with Bridget Watkins gets into a pretty violent encounter she had with a moose while training for the Iditarod. It might not be suitable for all listeners, so just a heads up about that. Here's Lex.
Welcome to this bonus edition of the Iditapod, a podcast about the Iditarod. I'm Lex Trinan, usurping the host seat from Casey Grove, at least for this episode. Today, I've got a truly riveting story for you about a moose attack on a dog team outside of Fairbanks near Salcha during a training run. The musher is Iditarod rookie Bridget Watkins. You might know her as the daughter of racers Alan Moore and the stepdaughter of Allie Zirkel. Bridget's been running dogs since she was about 5 years old and recently took up training for the Iditarod. She's also a delightful person, by the way, and a wonderful storyteller, as you'll hear. You might have read part of this story in the news a few weeks ago. It was picked up by some major Alaska outlets, but boy, let me tell you, there is a lot more to this story. And hearing Bridget tell it had me literally on the edge of my seat for our entire 40-minute phone call. She told us, by the way, on her drive home from the Fairbanks emergency room where she works as a nurse. The cell phone gets a little spotty at times in between Fairbanks and Salcha, where her kennel is, so bear with us. Anyway, here's Bridget Watkins recounting her moose encounter in early February.
When I saw this moose, he was a long ways away on a straightaway, and he was following up that I actually even said, huh, I think that's a moose. And then he, like, kept going and just disappeared, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And he just left. And then, you know, I saw him again probably 5 minutes later, and I was like, huh, I think he's actually going down the trail in front of me. And so then I started looking at his tracks, but he disappeared again. And the third time I saw him, I actually stopped and I told my handler that was behind me, I said, there's a moose up here that I think is running the trail in front of us. And then she saw him, and he was closer at this point, but still a long ways away. And so I was like, all right, well, he kept going. And I was like, man, I don't know. So we kept going, and then we came around a corner, and he was now only like 150 yards in front of me. And so I stopped and immediately put my snow hoops down, and I actually got my gun out of my pocket because I was like, you know, he's a little closer than I like. And I actually got off and I had the gun in my hand, and I was standing in front of my team, and this moose was looking at me, but he was not aggressive. You know, we are very keen and aware, like, I'm a moose hunter. Like, I've grown up in Alaska, like, we subsistence hunt. Like, I know when an animal's angry for the most part. He was not aggressive. He was not defensive. He was more curious, checking us out. And he actually turned around and walked off again. And so then I'm standing there with a gun, and the moose walked away, and I was like, man, what the crap? Like, he's gone again. This was like the fourth time we had seen him, you know? And then he went around the corner like he did every other time, and I was still standing there. And the next thing I knew, he was running full speed straight at me. And I thought, oh my God, this is really happening. You know, so immediately I'm like yelling, trying to be like, hey, no. And he never slowed down. And so when I knew he wasn't going to slow down, I immediately threw off my trigger, my glove off my right hand, which is my trigger hand. And, I was like, oh my God, this is like, he's not stopping. Like, I'm going to have to shoot him. And so it was at that time that I was like, oh my God, this is like worst case scenario. And so I just aimed and I took a deep breath. And I remember saying to myself, like, breathe, you have to breathe, like, take a deep breath. And I literally counted to three. I blew it out and I was like, steady. And I knew, because I know what gun I'm carrying, I was like, this is not going to kill him. But I was like, surely in my mind, I'm like, surely it's going to stop him, but I have to make a really good shot, right? He's coming fast. And so when I thought he was close enough, because I knew with that little gun, he also had to be close enough that I could injure him to make him stop. And I got off the first few shots and he never stopped. And so what happened is my gun jammed. And so the gun jamming actually saved my life, because I don't think I would have stopped shooting. I think I would have emptied my clip then, and there would have been like, and he would have run over top of me. Well, as soon as my gun jammed, I thought, oh my God. And I actually thought, I'm dead. Like, because he was like a step in front of me, and I literally turned, like, covering my head because I thought he was coming over the top of me, and I thought, this is it. And my poor handler is watching all of this, like, go down. I mean, like, she's watching this. And so when I turned and thought he was coming over my head, unluckily, you know, I'm running now away from the moose, and he's trampling my dog team right down the center of the line, like, lead dog down. And so he tangles, you know, he's like tangling in them and then runs over my sled. And then he stops with my sled. And so now my sled and all the dogs are all tangled, and he's kind of standing on the other side. So now it's like my dog team, the moose, and now the dog team that's attached to the snow machine. And so when that happened, I was telling my friend, I said, my gun's jammed, you know? And in my mind at this point, I still was like, I'm about to kill him. Like, he is going to die. I wasn't fearful that we were out of hope at that point. I just thought, I'm going to get this unjammed and I'm going to shoot him dead, right? Because he was at that point, you know, like 10 feet in front of me. And I was like, he's going to die. And I just kept telling her, you can't take your eyes off him. If he charges this, you can't get away from the snow machine. And, you know, I'm saying all this. I said, keep your eyes on him. Because I just knew he was like in two steps, he was going to get us. Because there was still this dog team that was in front of the snow machine that was barking at him. And so it was agitating him even more. Well, I got my gun unjammed and I stood right at the front of the snow machine. And so he was, you know, 15, 20 feet in front of me. And I shot him the rest of my bullets, like real close. And he never flinched. As soon as I shot him like twice, like we have it on video. As soon as I was shooting him, like bam, 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 he then turned and he charged straight at me again, like straight at me. And he stopped at the front of my steed, and I was right there at the, like, at the steering wheel of the snow machine. So he's now, like, you know, 4 feet in front of me. Like, I could count his whiskers on his nose and his eyebrows. So he's out of breath because, which I know now is because he was shot. I hit him 5 out of 6 times. So unfortunately, the bullets didn't penetrate all the way, but it was all in his front quarter. So I hit him, like, which would have been, like, complete lung shots. 2 in the lungs, 1 in the heart, 1 on the shoulder, and 1 in the face. So on the videos, the interesting part is this moose is standing, now after I've shot him all the time, he's standing there and constantly moving his mouth. And I remember thinking, why is he doing that? Like, why is he, like, is he eating? Like, what is he doing? But it was because I shot him in the face. Like, those first shots that I got off, I was aiming for, like, right at his chest. But he was running so hard and fast that it just missed his chest and it hit him in the face. And so his face was hurting. That's why he was, like, constantly, like moving his face and his mouth and, like, snorting. And it was terrible. So, but then here we are. And so now I just kept telling her, I said, like, I'm out. I have no more bullets. Like, I'm out, you know? And so he stood there. We stood there. My dog team's on the other side, and they hadn't been injured really bad yet at that point. And so they were still barking at him a lot. But this moose was really close to me, and I still had this dog team with 6 dogs attached to the snow machine. And so every time I would move, that moose would kind of act like he was going to, like, move forward to me. He was very agitated at this point. And so I, like, tried to, like, very slyly, like, sneak down, and I got to where the gang line was, and I just cut the gang line loose that was attached to the snow machine. And so that saved those 6 dogs' lives because they took off running down the trail. And so I was like, you know, you have to make all these, like, split-second instant decisions of, like, is this good or bad? And in my mind, I'm going, they're going to run off. They're going to be gone. There's going to be dogs drugged down the trail. Like, I'm never going to find them again. But they may live. I cut it. And it's just those decisions that you have to make instantly. And it's like, this is better than death regardless. So I know that I can at least maybe save 6 dogs. And so I cut it and they took off and were gone. And so it was at that moment, I now have my knife in my hand, and I carry a very large knife on my hip at all times for situations that are like this. And I said to my friend, I said, there is no plan B. I said, he is going to kill us. I said, if he takes one step, he's on top of us. I said, you cannot get away from the snow machine. I said, you have to keep the snow machine between us and him. I said, don't step off the trail or you will sink. You know, like, we were by all these, like, little bushes. Like, there was no big trees to get behind. And all I had was this big knife. And I said, if he comes over the top of me, I'm going to stab him in the neck, but it's not going to kill him. Like, this will not kill him. And so here's my ER nursing brain again, and I'm like, this is going to be bad, you know? Like, I have a helmet on. I wear a helmet 95% of the time I'm running dogs. And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, maybe he's not going to crush my skull in, but he's probably going to break my ribs, and he's probably going to cause a pneumothorax, and there's no way a helicopter can get to me before I die because the ER's going to be a minimum of 2 hours away, and I won't make that, you know? And so all these things are going through my mind. It was at that moment that I knew this was the first time that the fear actually set in, because I just knew, like, he was so close to me that when he decided to charge the next time, I knew that I wasn't, there was no other, I was out of options. Like, I was going to have to take cover at this point and try and protect my body so that he couldn't stomp too much of me, right? And so it's that moment of, like, I'm really going to die. Like, this is going to happen. So this stare down went down for, you know, probably less than 10 minutes where he was right at my skis. And my team was still barking at him. And so he then, by the grace of God and unluckily for my dogs, retreated from us and went back and started stomping my dog team. And then he did that for the next 50 minutes over and over and over and over and over again. And his feet would get tangled in my sled. Like, in my mind, I'm like, they're all going to die. Like, he's going to kill every one of them. This was like the most horrific thing. And, like, you know, he's out of breath. His legs would get tangled. And then he would, like, try to stand up and, like, catch his breath. And he'd, like, get this same look. Every single time before he'd trample him, he'd, like, kind of do this, like, head-shaking thing. And then he'd tilt his head where his eyeballs could look down at them because he's, like, over top of them. He'd look down at them, and then he would just jump with his front feet and then just start pow, 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 like, over and over. And, like, you know, but back up to back where I was, like, he was in front of me and I had a knife in my hand, that's where I also had my Garmin GPS app, you know, obviously pulled it out, and I said, if he comes over the top of me, I'm going to push the SOS button. I don't know if you're familiar with those, you know, it's like I pushed this button and, like, the Air National Guard coming in. I actually flipped the cover off of it because it has a hard cover so that you can't accidentally activate it. I actually flipped off the cover and had my thumb on it because I thought, this is it. Like, this is how this story is about to end. And so, but that was when he went back and retreated to my dog. And so, like, the worst part is, like, you know, he would continue to harass, like, continue to assault them, like, over and over, and just the helplessness, like, their agitation went from, like, they want to kill him because that's what sled dogs do. They just, like, are crazy and think it's, like, a, you know, a wild animal that, and so they went from that to, like, these dogs that wouldn't move because every time they would then move or whimper or cry, if any of them did anything, he would go attack them again. And so they learned very fast, like, if somebody moves or somebody cries, they're getting beat down again. And so they went from this, like, super aggressive team to, like, which is normal. That's normal behavior because they're animals, to this, like, they didn't move. And so that's actually one of the picture I posted on social media. They weren't moving. And so, I mean, it's the worst thing in the world because there was nothing I could do to save these dogs. And they were just looking at me like, help me. Like, and I was just like, buddy, you got to sit there. Like, don't move. It's okay. I'm right here. You know, like, I'm talking to the dogs. And then you'd see the moose do his thing where he's about to attack me. Be like, don't do it. Don't do it. And then it's just like, no, like the most horrific. And like, they're screaming. And it's just like, it's just the most awful thing you can imagine. Like it's terrible enough to like see a pet dog get attacked once and get hurt. But this happened so many times over and over, like those sounds and those images just don't go out of your mind. And that moose had a look in his eye. He just wanted death to occur. Like he just wanted to kill us. And I understand why, and I'll explain that in a little bit. But so all I could do, and I actually told my friend, I said, we got to pray. Like that's all we got. Like we need Jesus with us. Like you got to pray with me right now. And I was like, in the name of Jesus, like, stop. Like, you know, like, when you're in that situation, like, it's like, I've never been in that place in my life. Like, this assault would just not stop. And so after this was going on and the moose was far enough away from me now that he was back to, like, you know, 20 feet away, this is when I pulled out my phone and realized I have a bar of service. And so that's when, actually, on the videos, you could hear her saying, like, I was like, we got to call, like, I need help. We need people. Like, I need somebody to kill this machine. Like, and so we're trying to figure out, because we're in the middle of nowhere, who's going to come out here and kill a freaking moose, right? And so I had one bar of service, and I started texting every person I knew in the Salcha area and said, I need help. Like, help me. They're killing me. They're trying to, like, help, help, help. I need a gun, you know? And so I'm, like, rapidly trying to text all these people. And then I texted my friend, who we actually turned around. He has a cabin out on the Salcha River. And we turn around at his house, and so I actually texted him and said the same thing, like, help, help, I need help, like, moose killing us. And so I was like, bring a gun, and I actually, he then was the one that came, and it took him a while to get to us, but he's the one that actually came, and so he came from the opposite direction, and so he came around the corner, and when he got there, he, of course, it was actually the moose, my dog team, and then us. And then he stopped because he came upon it really quick because he came around a corner and there we were. Well, the problem was is then we're in his direct line of sight, right? Like, at this point, my friend Jen Nelson, all the videoing had stopped everything. She was on the phone with the troopers, and they're like, shoot, you can shoot. Like, you have permission to shoot. And so we're, like, screaming, like, shoot, you know, like, shoot them out. And, like, he's just standing there yelling at it, and we're, like, screaming, shoot. And then he finally calls me on my phone and he says, you're in my line of sight. And we're like, so we had to take off running down the trail, and we went over this hill, and we, like, got on our bellies and covered our heads because now we have bullets flying directly over our head. And so we're like, I'm like, oh my God, like, if I, like, I might get shot now. Like, I can't fix that either. I'm going to die from being shot. And so you just lay there, and, like, I literally, like, just held my breath, and I heard the shot, and then you wait, because is he going to shoot him again? I can't see him at this point, because we are over a hill, so that hopefully the shot would go over our head. And so then we lay there, and I'm like, oh my God, is it down? Is it down? Is it down? And he texts me down, and so we took off running down the trail toward him, and that was probably the most terrifying moment, that moment, that I finally could get back to my team, and it hit me like, they may all be dead. Like, I know what gruesome scenes look like from working in the ER, and all of that kind of flooded into my head of, like, this is going to be bad. Like, this is going to be bad. And, you know, I ran up to him, and there was only, like, one or two dogs that were actually sitting up, and the rest were, like, completely, like, collapsed on the ground. And I literally picked each one of their heads up. And that's when I was like, buddy, are you alive? Like, open your eyes, look at me, like, you're okay, you're okay. And it was like, literally, one by one, they opened their eyes. And I was like, oh my God, they're alive, oh my God, he's alive, you know. And so then it's like, and then it hit me, oh my God, like, I have to save these dogs. Like, I have to say, like, it went into, like, survival to, like, I have to save you. Like, you just survived this, now I have to see which one of you is sick and going to die. And how I'm going to get you out of here. So that's when my ER nursing really kind of took place, because that's where it was like mass casualty triage type things that, you know, I've done for humans, unfortunately. And it's just like looking at this group of 10 dogs. It's like, okay, who's the most critically injured? Like, is there anybody bleeding to death? Because, you know, it was awful. There's blood everywhere. Dogs had blood all over them. Like, it was awful. Like, as awful as you can probably not even imagine. And so I'm trying to determine, like, who's bleeding too much, where are you bleeding from, like, can you walk, can you breathe? Like, I know the most common things with dogs is they get kicked, and usually it's in their ribs, because it's the biggest place to be kicked. And so I'm like, okay, dogs usually get broken ribs, which then give them pneumothoraxes, and they can't breathe. And so I'm trying to assess, like, their breathing to see, like, okay, like, who's hurt the worst, right? And so all I could do is, like, start cutting dogs loose, because I'm just trying to get them freed. They were all tangled up. And so I'm trying to get them freed. And, like, one at a time, I'm looking them in the face. And, you know, that's when I started seeing the injuries. And that's when I was like, oh, my God, they're going to go into shock. Like, and so I started pulling off my parka. I took my parka off, trying to wrap dogs in my parka so they wouldn't get cold. And then I was like, okay, we have to get these dogs out of here. You know, like, I have to get these dogs out of here. Now, the most amazing thing is that those 6 dogs that I cut loose, they would run down the trail the opposite direction, and oh, about every 10 minutes, they would show back up. They would kind of check in with me. They would look at the moose, and they'd take off running again. All of them except for one. I had one dog, and she's my main lead dog. She never left my side. I didn't realize this in the moment, and I even tripped on her because she literally was right under my feet to the point of when we took off running and jumped over that hill and laid on our belly, she ran with me, and she laid beside me. It was the most amazing thing I have ever experienced in my life. And so, and her name's Raz. So she never left my side. The other five dogs would run off and come back, run off and come back, run off and come back. But she had slipped out of her harness, and so she was able to stay with me. And she did, which was crazy. And so then I had to figure out how I was going to get them out. You know, I know this story is long. I'm sorry. So then I had to figure out how to get them out. So then I went into, like, all the survival crap, like trying to tie knots together and get crap, you know, organized and trying to put my sled was undrivable. So now I'm going to try and hook up whatever dogs I can up to the snow machine to get them back out. And then I have to get a hold of people. And I'm like, you know, my husband, I'm like, I need the dog truck to the closest location. So I'm trying to find a trail out of here. And so he has to leave from Fairbanks. Well, my house is over an hour away from just Fairbanks, just to get to my house. And then he has to get my dog truck and then get to a trailhead. So he had to go get all of, you know, he got that, and he ended up meeting us at the trailhead. And the man that had shot the moose, he actually drove me and the sickest dog in my lap. I carried them on the back of that snow machine. And when I say on the back of the snow machine, there was no seat. I was sitting on his rack for 30 miles all the way being hauled out. And oh, it was actually like 20, but it was 20 miles like back out to where we could get to a trailhead. And so I carried these very sick dogs, and my husband met me there. And so then at this point in time, like, there was other people that I had sent those like SOS texts to that were showing up on the trail, and they were coming. They had like snow machines, and they had sleds and dog kennels. So the other dogs that were injured that I couldn't carry, they were bringing them in that way. And so it was like all these people showed up at the right time, you know, when we were trying to get back in, and these injured dogs that I couldn't carry, all of them. And then we got in, and the vets were waiting on us. And it was the most amazing thing I've ever experienced, was going into that vet. And North Pole Vet needs so many shout outs, because there's not words to describe what that trauma team looked like, and the events of how these dogs were cared for was impeccable. You know, there was a part of the story I did miss. When all of the craziness was happening after I got back to them and cut all the dogs loose, it wasn't until I got all the dogs lined back out and trying to figure out who could run and who was the sickest and who I was carrying back and all that, I realized that I was missing a dog, and it took me a second. I figured out who it was, and it was Flash. So, and I said to my handler, my friend Jen, I said, Flash is missing. I said, he was hurt really bad. I said, he was hit in the face. Like, I remember, like, when I ran back up to him, I said it was his face. Like, his face was bleeding. And I had to decide at that moment, was I going to leave this one missing dog out on the trail to try and save the rest? Or was I going to stay around and look for him? And that was a terrible choice as well. And I was like, I have to save, you know, the whole team versus this one dog. And so we left, not knowing where he was, what direction he went, because I never saw him take off. I just remember seeing him initially when I got up to him and thinking, okay, you're hurt bad. But then I never saw him again, and then I realized he was gone. And one of those snow machiners that came out to help us happened to find him down the trail, the opposite direction, find him down the trail, standing in the middle of the trail, just like dazed. And he, unfortunately, is the dog that has a significant head injury, and that was kicked right in the head. But he brought him in and literally showed up as we were about to drive off with the rest of the dog team to the vet. So, I mean, there's so many amazing, like, I don't know if you're a person of faith, but let me tell you, there was God in those moments, because we shouldn't have lived and none of those dogs should have lived. There was so much protection that occurred over us that I can't describe. And so there was some supernatural things happening because we should not be alive. And, you know, since then, so let's just fast forward, right? So we went from, like, okay, we're all going to die and they're going to kill all my dogs, to, oh, my gosh, like, there's still, like, some healthy dogs out here. And as a couple of days went by, it was like, you know, that was the number one question people kept saying is like, well, are you going to run? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to keep dogs alive. You know, for the first few days that we were in and out of surgery and in the vet, and like the last thing I could think about was Iditarod. I was like, I don't freaking know. Like, I don't even know if my dog's going to even walk. Like, I'm living with a vet. Like, I don't know yet. And, you know, I got home and kind of was able to be like, oh, my God. Like, I walk out to the yard and they're like, hey, what's going on? And I'm like, hey, like, how you doing, buddy? And they're like, oh, I'm good. We're ready to run. And I'm like, wow, like, you're good, good. Like, they're barking and crazy. And so it was kind of that moment that I was like, you know, I literally sat in my dog yard and I counted. And I'm like, you know, I have like 12 really healthy dogs, like, that are healthy. Like, I have 12 dogs still. And so it was at that moment that I was like, you know, I have to decide, like, what am I going to do? Like, I can't not run Iditarod just because I'm scared. Like, I can't run. I can't just say no because I'm like, you know, that was really hard. And I just don't think I want to do it, because you look at those dogs and they're like, why aren't we running today? Like, we've been running. Like, this is what we've been training here for like literally 3 years. Like, why would you not take me for a run? Because you're scared. And so I couldn't look them in the eye and be like, I'm too scared. I'm sorry. Like, we're just not going to do this, because I didn't have a reason. And so it was kind of in those moments that I was like, all right, we're going to make this work. And so then we just made it work. And so that's when, you know, I've borrowed some dogs from some fellow mushers, and then we've let some dogs heal. And now we're, you know, 2 weeks out, more than 2 weeks. We're going on 3 weeks tomorrow, 3 weeks tomorrow. Isn't that amazing? And believe it or not, like, I've gotten full bills of health from multiple vets, but all the Iditarod vets, they checked my dogs yesterday and they're good. And not only are they good, one of the dogs that was in the moose attack that we thought, no way, like, he's 100%. So, like, we're actually going to be running from the dogs that I didn't even think were possible. So I could possibly only have to borrow one or two dogs. I mean, it's incredible. Like, the miracles just keep coming. And so it's like, wow, like, this is amazing. There has been so many people pray about this. These dogs are like, they are hungry dogs at this point, let me just tell you.
That is amazing. Yeah, that's such miraculous. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's so exciting.
And so that's where we're at. And so now here we are, you know, a week out, and we're running. We're going to do everything we can to get to the finish line. But honestly, the starting line, I may celebrate almost as much, if not more, than the finish line. The finish line will be great. But it has taken everything in my power to get to the starting line. So there's going to be some celebration. Like, the moment people are like, what are you looking forward to? I'm like, the moment I look forward to the most is like when that 3-2-1 go happens and they let me get on that trail. Like, that moment, like, there will be tears flowing down my eyes. And I don't know what's going to happen after that, but you know what? I've made it. At that point, when I leave that line, I am an Iditarod mushroom. We did make it here. And so that's what I'm proud of.
Heck yeah. Well, are you I just imagine after something like that, both you and I imagine the dogs too would have some trauma, you know, traumatic memories, and be worried about, you know, running into another moose. Do you feel like kind of jumpy out on the trail?
So, you know, there's one obstacle we've had to overcome in the last few weeks. Number one, I had to get back on a sled. Number two, I had to go on the same trail that this happened on. Number three, I had to go by the moose kill. The moose was gone, but I had to go by that same spot. Not only did I, but my dog team. I had to run by myself. I've had to run at night. All things I've never been scared of in my entire life. I now have, still to this day, I now have a fear and an anxiety component that I've never had in my life. Every day I'm challenged with that, and every day I meet it head on. And I know that it's going to be there, but we're getting better every day. There's been many panic attacks, like legit, that I've never had in my life. There's been many moments that there has been like literally hyperventilating. I can't breathe. Like, I can't do this moment on the trail, but we make it through each time. The dogs, for the most part, seem completely unfazed. Even the first time we went by the kill, like there was a few like sniffs, but they never broke stride. And that gave me encouragement to be like, wow, like, this doesn't bother you, but I'm about to, like, vomit, like heart racing, chest pain, like, the most terrible, like, I've never had PTSD, and I'm not diagnosed with that, but I'm still diagnosing myself with it. And so there's been tremendous anxiety, you know, and then there's always the fear of what happens when you see another moose, because people are like, oh, what's going to happen? Well, let me tell you something. I've done many runs since that day, and there has only been one run that I have not seen a moose. And on those runs, I have had to draw my gun twice already on moose again. Twice. So to say that I'm facing a fear, it's not just a fear of what if, it's a fear of this really could happen again. So there's been a lot of trauma and a lot of drama with it. And it's nothing I thought that I would ever experience. And I, you know, it's like, well, how do you deal with it? I'm like, you know, I don't really know. Like, I'm just like literally trying to figure it out every day to be like, okay, like, how am I going to keep my crap together today? And, you know, there's definitely certain triggers that I don't know are going to trigger these emotions within me that I've never had before. And so sometimes, like, for instance, somebody, you know, they always want to share stuff with you after things. They're like, oh, look at this. And like, without looking, I had returned to work and somebody actually sent me a video of a moose outside of their house without even me thinking. And I looked at it. And as soon as I looked at it, I literally had a panic attack. Like, you start like uncontrollably, like, and I've never experienced that. So I didn't know that was possible, especially for me. And so, like, you know, right there at work, and I'm like, I can't breathe, like, instantly, like, heart starts racing. I'm like, and, you know, you have to learn how to, like, I'm having to overcome this every day. So to say that I'm over it, I'm not over it, I'm just dealing with it.
Yeah, totally. Well, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, but you said, and this was a question I had before we started, but, you know, the way the moose was acting, you know, that seems, it seemed like the way you were describing it was malicious. It was trying to, you know, trying to do harm to your animals. Have you ever seen something like that? And how do you make sense of how they were acting?
So yes and no. So yes, I've had them look like they're angry. Yes, but it's usually when you're between a mom and a baby, and usually that you can steer them off or get away from them. And that none of that was possible. So once he looked angry, it was when he was charging. So I didn't even have time to respond. But then he had this look of death, like I said, where he just wanted us dead. And so what I had found out since the attack is that in that location within a 5-mile radius, that week alone, 5 moose had been killed by a wolf pack. 5. So my guess, and this is what I believe, is that this moose had already been chased by wolves. He was a very large bull, and he was not going to give way to some pack of wolves killing him. And so when he saw us and he got close enough to see us, he thought we were chasing him. So when he decided he was not going to get killed, he turned around and he tried to kill us. And that's why he had that look of, I'm going to kill you, in his eyes. Not like, I'm scared of you like they normally are. It was, I'm going to kill you. So it was a very different look. And so even the moose that I run into now, so I run into a mom and a baby, and they ran off. So they are scared of us because now the mom and babies are different. Not only the moms are really protective of their young, but the difference this year is they can't protect them because they can't get them away from the wolves. And so they know they have to get away or they're going to get eaten. And so they don't sit there and try and fight you like normal. Like the mama and the babies are usually the ones you would worry about.
That was musher Bridget Watkins recounting a moose encounter in early February. Thanks for listening to this bonus edition of the Ididapod. Hope to see you folks out on the trail.